You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.
Welcome, State of Our Football Nation, or SOOFN, as Josh and I call it each and every week on FNR. An opportunity to talk about the game, to talk about some of the latest goings on, and of course to talk to the people that are making the game exciting and giving us something to ponder and something to enjoy. A busy new A-League season is getting ever closer. We've seen, finally, after so much waiting, some early season action. It was the FFA Cup. The magic of the Cup promised us some exciting football over the last couple of nights. And again, Josh and I will discuss it. And we'll even catch up with Simon Hill, who is the voice of 10, the voice of Paramount Plus, the voice of 10 Play. And he'll be joining us around about the 5:30 mark. And of course, before that, an opportunity to talk to a brand new signing at Melbourne City. It's not Jordan Hall, where you can get special sales on at the moment. They've got a 72-hour special sale. But Jordan Hall, young man who's plied his trade in the NPL with Green Gully over the last couple of years. He's actually a City Academy boy. So in a sense, Josh, he's going home, which has become a very fashionable term and phrase as of late, has it not?
Yes, indeed. And seeing him play in NPL Victoria, you can see he's every bit the Melbourne City Academy produced centre-half. The kind of ball-playing, patient, very confident in possession, and very agile as well for someone of his size. He's got all those kinds of attributes to play, you know, CFG football, which demands a high line and demands that you need recovery pace and demands that you are confident enough to play the ball out from the back. So he's definitely a ball-playing defender and someone I've really enjoyed watching for Green Gully, a team that's really tried to play a very ambitious brand of football in the NPL. Occasionally, it actually has gotten them into trouble, and not least their goalkeeper, Jared Tyson, has got himself into a few scrapes with you know, the risks that he takes. But they're always an entertaining side to watch, and I think he's really earned this move back to the professional ranks.
Tell me something. Is he a bit like Trent Sainsbury?
A little bit, yeah. There's definitely similarities in that mould. You could compare him to any one of the defenders that's come out of the City Academy recently. Certainly Sainsbury would be the kind of play he'd be trying to emulate. And we know it's a high-pressure position for a young player to come into. Correct. It's very difficult to break into an A-League first team when you're a centre-back because, you know, you'll make one mistake and suddenly the glare is on you. Whereas for an attacking player, you can kind of get away with a few missed chances or a few miscontrolled passes, and it's a little bit more forgiving. So, you know, the pressure is certainly on and you don't get that many opportunities because usually winning sides are reticent to break up centre-half partnerships unless they absolutely have to. So it's a great challenge for him, but I'm sure it's one he'll be relishing.
Well, he's had a couple of years now at Green Gully, and from all reports, he's done very, very well. And it should be said, Michael Petrillo was very quick to acknowledge the support and the involvement of Green Gully in allowing and making this move possible. So that's terrific too. So, there's some relationship there, and he leaves on good terms. And, of course, he's all excited about the new surroundings. He's a City Academy boy, but everybody's moving to a whole new place. It's called Casey Fields.
Yeah, so he's going from the west to the southeast, which is exciting. Great facility. I've been out there to commentate a game when Preston played against Melbourne City. I was actually one of the few people allowed in when it was a behind closed doors fixture. Back when we had a brief resumption of the league this season, and it's a wonderful pitch. Like, it's just so the luxury of being able to spray the ball around on the deck like that is not something that's extended to every, you know, NPL 3 ground, you might say, and that's key to the philosophy that City are trying to implement. And I think it's also a compliment to Green Gully that we've seen a couple of players actually come back down from the A-League and then bounce back up, because it suggests that the style of football that they're trying to play in NPL Victoria is translatable to A-League football. which we know the leagues can be very, very different in styles. You know, we've seen Stefan Nigro go back to Central Coast Mariners and do extremely well when it looked like his A-League career might be over. And, you know, he's been given a second chance that he's taken with both hands. And now Jordan Hall. And there's a few other players, a young player named Nick Georgopoulos, who I'm keeping an eye on, who's had to toss up between going to take up an offer with Western United and play in their academy side, but meaning that he has to actually move down two divisions in the meantime to play in NPL 3 instead of starting for a team in NPL 1. So that's an interesting conundrum.
Is that to give him time and an opportunity to stay as focused and as fit as possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dilemma. I was actually talking to his father after a game once, and he's saying, well, you know, he just loves playing and he wants to play at the highest level possible to develop. So given that he can play in the top flight of Victorian football but won't go straight into the senior team, you know, it's a bit of a dilemma. Do I say yes and go into that academy environment? So I think that's something interesting to talk to Jordan about, his decision to play senior football rather than, you know, trying to bide his time and not playing, you know, at City, and how that's helped his development.
Josh, overseas we see the EPL clubs loath, of course, to bring up their young academy players straight away. Mm. They're more inclined to loan them out to lower tier clubs and give them a chance. And even clubs in other countries, Tottenham, for example, have a couple of youngsters who've gone and they're plying their trade in Sweden and in Switzerland. So it's very interesting the pathways that younger footballers are having to take. We're seeing some of them even put their hand up to go to India and play in the Indian Premier League.
Yeah, Tommy Mitchell has gone over there, which is a big surprise, playing for East Bengal, who I think are a much bigger club than people in Australia might realise. I wouldn't necessarily say the league in India is of a particularly high standard across the board, but playing in that atmosphere in front of, I don't know how many tens of thousands of fans they get every week, it is incredible. That club, it's a really uneven league in terms of support, India. It's a really interesting competition because in some parts of the country, they care very little for football. In some parts, they're absolutely football mad. East Bengal, certainly one of those clubs where the fan base is absolutely crazy. So that's going to be an amazing experience for him. Just in terms of that kind of player development stuff, it's interesting seeing Premier League clubs almost treat these youngsters coming out of their academies as almost like investment properties that they're flipping for profit. You know, Chelsea have been the prime suspects in that regard in terms of very few of their young prospects actually getting into the first team, but they've been able to make big profits on them regardless, you know, selling them to clubs, other clubs in the Premier League and in the Championship as well.
Which has allowed them to really bring in players like Lukaku and others who ordinarily would be a huge investment, and they've been able to square the books or, in fact, you know, stay on the right side of positive, which has got to be a good business, hasn't it?
Yeah, I have to say it's been successful. I would say that there's occasional embarrassing mistakes that end up being made, such as Declan Rice. And, you know, Frank Lampard insisting that he was the player he needed and the board actually being very reticent to spend big money on him because he was a former Chelsea player, and the optics of having to splash £80 million on a guy that, you know, you had for free, essentially, is, you know, very negative. But that was apparently one of the things that led to them getting rid of Lampard because he wouldn't shut up about Declan Rice. And Manchester United, of course, had to do the same thing with Paul Pogba, coming through their own youth system, selling him to, or letting him go to Juventus on a free transfer and then paying £80 million for him several years later.
Speaking of Manchester United, was there a bigger game? Was there a bigger draw card in the world of football last week or last weekend than the young man that we've known as Cristiano Ronaldo?
I mean, it's just been absolute deity worship since his return, hasn't it? I mean, your Manchester United social media accounts haven't shut up about him for 5 seconds.
No, and, correct.
They were brought swiftly back down to earth yesterday morning against young boys of Bern.
And yet, after 16 minutes, they were right where they wanted to be, one goal up, and Ronaldo back on the scoreboard, looking like he was going to lead them to another famous victory.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of spell that Ronaldo's inflicted on opposition goalkeepers, but it's certainly a handy one because I think all three of his goals so far could have been saved. But he got his goal and it all looked rosy until the red card.
Poacher. He's become a poacher. Mm. And I say to people time and time again, you're going to score plenty of goals when you can create mischief or doubt in goalkeepers. And if you drift, if you come into their line of vision at the last possible moment and you see them time and time again, goalkeepers, even in the EPL, flapping at corners. I mean, there should be no reason why a goalkeeper with two hands misses any corner. And yet, week in, week out, no matter whether it's the Championship or whether it's the EPL, you see keeper after keeper making problems for themselves. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I mean,
it's the movement.
Yeah.
It's the late arrival into the box.
I think it's also modern footballs just move a lot in the air.
Yeah. I remember I was at a City game, and I remember talking to another great Bootser, who's a tremendous player for Sydney and also, he said to me, you've got to understand the dynamics of the ball. It moves and shifts and skids in a way that the old footballs never did. And not having played with them, it's unfair for me to be too critical. But I absolutely think that there's a technical challenge to the modern keeper. And they're not getting it right 100% of the time. I still think at the end of the day, where you can go with two hands, you should always go with two hands. And this business of trying to punch a ball out of the air, a lot easier to try and parry it or catch it than try and punch it. But, hey, De Gea and others are doing it almost every week.
And there's the De Gea school of using his feet instead of his hands. So you get there quicker. He's pretty good at that. But back to the Ronaldo thing, and I think this is the problem for United in that he is too big for Solskjaer to handle. And it was quite obvious that, you know, the 36-year-old who can't really run should be the player you withdraw at halftime when you're down to 10 men and defending a lead. But he couldn't do it. And, you know, Ronaldo offered really nothing until he was eventually substituted around the 70-minute mark. And I think that was a big mistake. Solskjaer also going uber defensive and playing five in the back when he was already down to 10 men really gave United no outlet on the flanks. They're playing essentially 5-3 and Ronaldo isolated on his own as the one up top.
And he ceded territory to young boys. And ultimately, what happened? That goal came from an error.
Yeah. And
pressure.
Lots of crosses into the box, lots of pressure. Eventually, it told. And I think Solskjaer's Champions League record is pretty appalling. He's lost something like 7 out of 13 games under his tenure. And, you know, he's had a couple of famous wins in there as well. But his management of big games, he deserves to be under the spotlight at this point. But I think now with Ronaldo there, it's hard for any manager. And, you know, his great mentor to both of them, Sir Alex Ferguson, always goes on about in all of his various autobiographies and leadership books that he's penned over the years, is that if you don't have control, you've got nothing, you're lost, you're adrift at sea. And I don't think Solskjaer necessarily has control at the moment of that dressing room, despite the star power.
Did you notice the number of Glazers in the corporate boxes for that game last week against Newcastle?
Yeah, they're like deadbeat dads or something. They only pop around once a year.
They were all there, the entire family. They were there because they realised it was going to be a very special occasion.
And they seem to have placated fan sentiment with the signing of Ronaldo. Remember, they were storming Old Trafford not too long ago. Everyone's got
It's called decoy.
Glaze over their eyes.
This, you can't see what I'm doing with this hand.
Well, George, we better take a break because we've got a special guest waiting for us on the other side.
Fantastic stuff.
Jordan Hall is going to join us. New Melbourne City signing, returning to the club where he came through the academy. Great story. He's going to be joining us in the Zoom room on the other side of this break here on State of Our Football Nation.
You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.
Welcome back. State of Our Football Nation here on FNR Football Nation Radio. And we're delighted to be joined now by a guy who's come through the Melbourne City Academy, gone away to play senior football in the NPL and made the comeback at A-League level. Jordan Hall, welcome to FNR and congratulations.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
It must be a big moment for you when the call came.
Oh, yeah, it was. I got a call on a weekend and answered the call. And it was PK, Patrick Kinsnorba, on the other side. And, he just wanted me to come in and have a look at me. So I just went in and thought I did pretty well. And, went from there.
Michael Petrillo also thought you had done very well and was very happy to get you to sign. You're there for a couple of years. It's back to the future in the sense that you're an academy boy with City, but then they're in a whole new place. This is all going to be new surroundings. How are you finding it?
Very good, actually. Obviously, I was in the youth team. Loved it. Every minute of being there in the youth team as well. Obviously, went away. And just to be back, it's like home for me being back there. So I'm enjoying every minute.
Now, you're a player. You were there at Bundoora. Can you tell us the difference? What's the feeling of difference now? Bundoora, the original City Academy, now being transformed and recommissioned at Casey Fields. And there's so much development around you. And you can see building going on. What's the feeling? Can you get a sense it's going to be very special?
Yeah, it's a special feeling. You can tell all the players are excited of what's to come. And it's just the amount of work they're going into making sure everything's right for us off the field and on the field. It's a good feeling to have, and it's a good club to be a part of.
A lot of people at the NPL club, Green Gully, have been very supportive of you. And they were also supportive of this move to get you to City. Anybody special you want to acknowledge and thank very much?
Steve Downs and Steve Laurie, my two coaches there. They've helped me a lot along the way. Ray as well at the club. Everyone at the club at Green Gully was amazing. Couldn't have gone to a better club, I don't think. And like you said, helping me get to the A-League level as well, back there where I wanted to be, they've just helped me so much along the way.
Now, Josh and I have been talking just before you got on. We were thinking, elegant on the ball, the defender. Who are the sort of guys he's going to be holding up the fort against? Then we thought, Matthew Leckie. How hard is it in training? Making sure you can keep Matthew down. And then, of course, did we mention Jamie? And there's a crop of them there. All want to score goals.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think it was the first session I went into. I was up against Jamie McLaren up front. Leckie was on the wing and Andy was on the other wing. So it was definitely something a bit different. It's going to make me a better player as well. And it's like you said, having Leckie there as well, he's an amazing person to have around the training facilities and helping the younger lads as well, which is also good.
And there are some young lads there that Josh and I are very keen about. One of them is young Marco Tilio. What's he like to defend against?
Oh, he's very quick. He's nippy. He's skillful. And he's quite a character off the pitch as well. So he's good to have around.
We're finding that out. Go, Josh.
Jordan, I'm really interested in the manner in which you left City and then playing senior football in the NPL, because there's this weird gap for players that fall into a certain age group where, they're too old for the A-League Academy sides. There's not really a level in between. And sometimes it can be hard to kick on with your development and get back up to A-League level once that transition occurs. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you. I thought, obviously being there in the youth team, I felt technically good enough, but I wasn't physically probably at the stage yet to obviously break into the A-League as a centre-back. So I'd obviously gone away, worked on my craft a little bit, went into the NPL, which is a quite physical league as well. So I've done that, and yeah, I feel like I've come back even better now.
Did you play any FFA Cup games in your 2 years at Green Gully?
I think I played a couple, yeah. I think I played two, because the first season, the COVID, was the COVID season. And yeah, I played I think we won 10-0.
Whoa.
In our last, yeah, it was 10-0 the last FFA Cup game we played, and then COVID hit again. So yeah, haven't been too lucky with that. I was hoping to go on a bit of a cup run there.
Mm. Who's the toughest striker you faced in NPL Victoria? Because there's a lot of different challenges at that league. Some of them, you've got your really physical target men, you've got the skillful guys like Brandon Barnes.
Yeah. So the best striker I played up against is Alex Salmon. And obviously, he's definitely the best striker in the league, in my opinion. But for the other teams, I'll probably say Brandon Barnes would be up there. He's quite smart in the runs he makes. On the ball, he can finish. He would definitely be up there.
What makes Alex Salmon so lethal? He seems to have a little bit of everything to his game. You can't really pin it down as like one skill set. Brandon Barnes is very obvious, just like ridiculous left foot, and you know, can dribble past anyone. But Alex Salmon, you know, he's got that target man presence. He's good in the air. He can score from outside the box. He's a bit of a jack of all trades.
Yeah, he is definitely. He's got a great touch. He's probably one of the best finishers I've seen at NPL level as well. His character off the pitch, and I think he's so confident in his own abilities as well, that I think that makes a big difference in a lot of players too. So I would say his confidence is plays a key role in it as well. He knows he's a good player.
Speaking of confidence, Jordan, who's the most confident person at City at the moment?
I'd probably say Jamie McLaren's very confident. He's he's very low key confident, but he means business. So, yeah, I would say he's very confident at the moment.
How fit does Andrew Naboot look?
He's looking very fit. He's looking very good. he's rapid as well. So
I was going to say, talk about big bodies and quick. He's all of that, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He definitely is. He's it's a full package. So he's been doing very well in preseason. I'm sure he can't wait to start the season as well.
Now, you've got some terrific people, Royston Griffiths, you've got Curtis Good. You're 187. Yep. How do you stack up compared to those big bodies?
Pretty good, actually. I wouldn't say I'm a lot smaller or anything. I'd probably say I'm not too sure how tall
Who's feeding you?
who's feeding me? I've been telling the chef to give me a bit more meals to fill me up a bit, because Griffiths is a mountain. But it's like you said, though, like to have them players as well around me, and to watch them and help them, like they guide me and to learn off them, it's amazing. So
where did you start your football?
I started back home in England. I was born in England and then moved to Sydney with my parents at 12.
I think we can still detect a hint of the accent.
Yeah, it's still there a little bit, but it's starting to go.
It's probably helped by a couple of years at Green Gully, hanging around with all those Poms in the dressing room there.
That's right. Yeah, there's a few there.
So one thing I was interested in is the style of play at Green Gully and how that's kind of prepared you for the return to A-League football. Because I noticed that, you know, regardless of sort of situation, there is an insistence at Gully on playing out from the back. And, you know, sometimes you pay for it. You know, Jared Tyson's got himself into a few scrapes outside of his own penalty area, but there is a philosophy that he's stuck to pretty adherently.
Yeah, that's right. So that was one of my main reasons joining Green Gully as well, because I would consider myself a ball playing centre back. And that's sort of what I was looking for a manager and a club that wanted to play out from the back, look to have as much possession as possible. And I think that suited me to a T. So I was happy to join Green Gully. And look, you're going to get a few mistakes, obviously, out the back. But that's, like you said, it's going to happen. So, Green Gully was sort of an easy decision for me.
Jordan Hall is our special guest on State of Our Football Nation on FNR. Last time you were at City, you were a part of the Academy boys, and yep. City was working really hard to become an established presence in the A-League. Well, you go back and they're champions. How does that feel? No pressure?
no pressure at all, no. Like I say, it's not an easy team to get into, but the amount of amazing players around me and I can learn so much, especially from Patrick Iznogo. As you know, he was a centre-back himself. And
I remember he was a 16-year-old playing at South Melbourne. So, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
He always seemed to end the game with a bandage on his head. That's my enduring memory of Patrick Iznogo.
Always. He's a good lad.
Talk to us about the captain. Is he back and in training?
What was that, sorry?
The captain, is he back and training? We're talking about Scotty.
Yeah, he's back in training. Back in training. Can't wait for the season to start. I think he's a very good captain. He's really good with the young lads as well, which is always good. And he's a leader. He just wants to win, and I'm sure he wants to go back to back as well this season.
Are you getting any chance to meet some of the new W League side? They've got a bundle of new players they're signing up, and they've signed a couple more this week.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I haven't actually had the chance to meet them yet, but I might see them next week. So hopefully I can see a few new faces and introduce myself.
Fantastic. And Josh?
Last one from me. City are planning this move to Southeast, and obviously the training centre has been set up, and there's talk of maybe playing some A League games. Certainly, some W League games have already been played down in Dandenong, and you've got experience of playing against sides from Southeast in the NPL, so you know what a kind of football hotbed that region is. How do you feel about that becoming the kind of new identity of City on your return?
I'm looking forward to it. All the teams I've played at that way in the NPL, there's always been a good crowd there, and it's always been an actual tough game to go to as well away. So to have that many football fans around that area, it's exciting. So hopefully we can get a lot of them down to watch us play.
Well, exciting times. You've got some terrific young talent, Stefan Kolakowski, Marco Tilio, and of course you're right up there. Stepping back in very familiar surroundings, as we said, but brand new in a crazy sort of way. So we wish you tremendous opportunity, and we wish you nothing but good luck, my boy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Jordan Hall, one of the new signings for Melbourne City, the Premiers, who are very, very keen about making their new base a fortress on so many levels, not only for their A-League side, but their W League side, which is gathering pace, and it's looking pretty impressive. And, of course, the Youth League side, which also has some outstanding young talent. Have you had a chance to meet some of the young youth players this year?
I have. I've had a few of them in training with us, and they've been doing very well. It's all about biding their time for them lads. But it's exciting to see some of the talent coming through the youth system. Like I said, obviously I was there. I won the youth league with Melbourne City, so it's it's a good stepping stone for them boys, and hopefully in the future we can see them signed up as well.
Fantastic! Thank you, Jordan, for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Pleasure, Jordan. And on the other side, George, we've got Simon Hill waiting, so make sure you don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.
Josh Parrish, George Denikian, and another special guest on State of Our Football Nation. And the best way to welcome him is to say the voice of the game down under, Simon Hill. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, George. Thank you for that kind introduction.
No. It's for us, it's been a joy listening to you and watching you at Fox, especially in the early years when Fox was doing such a tremendous job setting up a whole new platform and giving people an opportunity. And they were also pushing a whole new subscription model television set up that many Australians really haven't grasped or come to the idea that, we should be paying for our footy. because they've been spoiled for great many years. But that platform has now eased out, and there are other streaming platforms like Optus and Stan now doing some great coverage of the game. But we were waiting for another new deal to be done in the game. And lo and behold, we heard about Paramount Plus, a new streaming platform. And then we discovered, actually it was Viacom and CBS, which of course own 10 in Australia. And we knew something exciting was about to take shape. When did you get an inkling that there was a whole new model to sell the game and to promote the game and to showcase the game in Australia?
It's a good question, George. And to be honest, the answer is it was quite late on in the piece. If you'll remember the newspaper speculation at the time, when, because we all knew that the A-League rights, you know, were up for grabs again at the end of the last season, and the W League, of course, and the international rights come to that. But the name that was being talked about predominantly was Stan and Channel 9. Fox, of course, were still in the running as well. And there was, you know, a bit of talk of various other platforms such as DAZN. I think even Amazon was mentioned at one point.
Yes, it was.
And there might have been one or two others as well that I've forgotten. But to be honest, the Channel 10 Paramount Plus thing was a bit of a surprise. I don't know how late they came into the conversation, but when they did, obviously it was like, oh, this is interesting. All of a sudden, there's something a bit different in the market. When they got the rights, obviously for broadcasters like me and many others, you're thinking, well, okay, I hope they're going to be interested in me. And thankfully for me, you know, they were. It took a bit of time to get over the line, as these things do. I signed a few weeks ago.
And you were almost out the door. You were almost heading back to Manchester City.
Well, I would have probably headed back to London, to be brutally honest, not Manchester per se. But yeah, it was, look, I don't know how close I came to actually leaving Australia, but it was around November last year. So this was long before, you know, 10 were a part of the conversation, and even Stan and Channel 9. At that point, you know, we hadn't even started the last season of the A-League on Fox. And obviously I was out of work. I was lucky enough to pick up a fair bit of freelancing work, but at that particular point, it was difficult. And, you know, I was looking into the distance thinking, you know, maybe I don't get a gig next year, even if I stay. And am I going to be able to survive? Do I want to stay here? And the answer really was, as much as I love Australia, and you'll get this being football people yourself, I'm a football man. I came here, as much as I like Australia, you know, I came here to work in football. And if I'm not working in football, then really my reason for being here doesn't exist. So I got to the point in late November last year where I'd sort of made a decision, and I was literally 2 weeks away from heading home. I have an apartment in London, and I gave my tenant notice and said, sorry, I'm coming back. And I got my travel exemption, which came through very quickly. Maybe they'd be glad to see the back of me. I don't know.
They might be vying for a job in broadcasting. And they thought, get this guy out first.
Maybe.
And we got room.
Yeah.
Now, look, it's exciting time.
So I was close. But just to finish that off, the only reason that I didn't is that the COVID spike happened in the UK. All of a sudden, the cases went gangbusters. At that point, of course, I wasn't vaccinated. Virtually nobody was in Australia. Being over 50, I was thinking, oh, do I want to go back to that? It's a risky business. You know, you don't want to play with your health. So no, I thought I'd tough it out for a few more months. And of course, you know, the rest.
Blessings. Let me tell you, from our perspective, it's seriously exciting because this CBS Viacom 10 play has come together in a fantastic time. Because suddenly we've seen the API or the APL, the Australian Professional Leagues. We've seen FA, Football Australia. And we've seen now the FFA Cup given a level of cred that it hasn't had before. We've always been lovers of the game and lovers of a national knockout. But 10 came along and said, we're going to give it, you know, a standalone platform, and we're going to make it a weekend opportunity to showcase it to as many Australians as possible. And then, of course, we heard that it was not only going to be free-to-air, which everyone's been clamouring about, but there'd be streaming opportunities as well. And they were going to use all the technology they had to make it young, to showcase the next generation of footballing fans and give them an opportunity to not only fall in love with the game, but see it presented in a fashion that hadn't been done before, doing basically 10 was hoping to do, or is hoping to do, to the game what they've done with the big bash cricket. And if they can do that, then we know, you know, Josh knows, and I have enormous respect and pride in watching Josh and that young cadre of broadcasters that we've seen develop over the last 4 years at FNR. The more opportunities that avail themselves and give them a chance, as it's giving you a chance, one, to headline this new coverage, I think it's, you know, it's a 5-year deal. That's a big commitment, and it showcases a tremendous new era. And we've all got to back it. We've all got to support it. And I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for all the young men and women because, hey, did I mention there's a Women's World Cup coming down under and not that long away. And with every passing week in lockdown, it seems to me, can we get out of this lockdown so we can welcome the world to Australia and New Zealand? It's going to be a seriously exciting development.
Look, it's very exciting, and obviously we're just at the start of that journey with 10 and Paramount Plus. It's very much going to be a partnership both with the APL, which means the A-League and the W-League, and also with Football Australia for the national teams, the Socceroos, the Matildas.
And the youth.
And the youth as well. Yeah, and you know, the one thing you missed out there is the other thing that we're already seeing on 10 play over the last few nights is the Asian Champions League, and not just the games involving the Australian clubs, but we're seeing all those round of 16 ties being broadcast live and free as well on 10 play. We've got the Matildas coming up next week. They're playing a friendly against Ireland. It's not a particularly nice time. It's 3:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, but, you know, there's nothing we can do about that.
But if it's on 10, you can record it and watch it when you want.
That's right.
Wasn't available before.
And we've got a preview show on Sunday at 4:00 as well, looking ahead to that game. Uh-huh. So we're just at the start of this journey now. And obviously, you know, plans are still being put into place. The APL is talking about having a football hub. You talked about those young broadcasters. I was listening to the first FFA Cup game that went out on 10 during the week. Young Campbell Johnson up there in Queensland, who's a great young kid and knows the game, loves the game, working with Nick Meredith, the old hand, the old dog up there in Queensland.
Keep him on a leash.
So, you know, there's going to be lots of opportunities. And the great thing about this, certainly from my limited experience with being at 10 so far, I've only been there a few weeks, so as I say, it is early days, but they are mad keen to make this work, and they've got experience in taking a product, which they did with the Big Bash, and turning it into something very, very special that connects with people via their big platform that they have over free-to-air and now with Paramount Plus as well. The great thing about streaming that we didn't have a few years ago, and for this, I suppose, you know, we should give a whole lot of credit to Optus as well in many ways, because, you know, I remember a few years ago when the Premier League went over to Optus and everybody went, oh, that ain't going to work. and, you know, they had a few teething problems with the World Cup as well, but it's proven that streaming is here and the technology has caught up. And now everybody goes, no, it's all good. So, you know, they've sort of paved the way. And this presents us as a sport now with a very exciting opportunity to finally realize the potential of our game. And I'm not excluding, by the way, the NPL clubs, because I'm one of those, probably like you and Josh. I want this second division up as well, up and running, showcase the lower tiers, really connect the pyramid. And I know that James Johnson and his team at FA are working on that. It's, you know, might not happen in a few months, but it's going to happen. And if we can get all the different moving parts of this game together, this has been the conundrum of our sport since before you and I had grey hair, George, is to get all the parts of the cake in perfect alignment. If we can do that, then goodness me, we have so much blue sky ahead of us. But we've been saying that for a long time. We've got to make it work.
I noticed you mentioned it, blue sky. Did you get almost heart palpitations when you heard that Cristiano Ronaldo was going to Manchester City?
Yeah.
You're a City man. What were you thinking when you heard the first no?
To be honest, the first thing I thought was, that's going to be funny. Imagine how angry that's going to make United fans to see him coming out in a Manchester derby wearing sky blue. To be honest, I don't know how serious City's interest was, because if you've read the subsequent reports, they refused to offer a transfer fee for him. So whether it was used as a bit of a red herring or not, I don't know. The City clearly needed a striker. And to be honest, on a pure football level, take the emotion out of it, I think Cristiano Ronaldo would have been okay for us for a year, because I think long-term City want Harry Kane, or they want Erling Haaland or Vlahovic or somebody else as their main striker, because Aguero's gone. But
agreed.
It would have been funny.
But he is a great poacher. Josh and I have discussed this, and we don't have to enter that realm of discussion about the best player in the world or the best ever, whatever. Forget the GOAT. He is a remarkable poacher. He's made himself an extraordinary poacher. We saw him at the ICC here playing for Real and against Man City, and there were 98,000, 99,000 people for what was ostensibly a midweek friendly at the other end of the world.
Yeah.
So and it was...
He's incredible.
And Bale was there, and he was fit and healthy and all that, and they looked magnificent.
Go on, George.
And everyone behind the scenes, and I was in corporate there looking after the heavy hitters, most of them from the AFL, and their children wanted one thing. Yeah. Can you guess what that one thing was?
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo's shirt or a selfie or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
James
Heard's
children wanted a photo or an opportunity to say hello.
The remarkable thing about Cristiano Ronaldo is he's 36, so let's be brutally honest. He's entering the twilight years of his career.
But he's not your average 36-year-old.
But he's in remarkable physical condition. And it's mentally that he's still got that hunger. Now, Cristiano Ronaldo could have gone off to Qatar. He could have gone off. He could. I mean, he could have gone anywhere. He could have gone to America and said, look, you know, I'm going to go and have a nice couple of years without any disrespect to those competitions, but, you know, take some money and have a slightly easier competition to play against. Instead, he's gone to the league that has the most scrutiny and for arguably the biggest club in it. And he's going back to a place where he was, you know, brilliantly successful before. And the old saying is, you should never go back. So, and what's he done? First two games, he scored 3 goals. That's the mark of one of the world's greats, not just of this era, but of any era. And, you know, for his sake, I hope he succeeds. Obviously, as a Man City fan, I hope he falls flat on his face.
Simon, talking of that kind of deity worship that we've seen on his return to Manchester United, coming back to the local game, I mean, obviously we're never going to attract someone of that stature down here, but do you still believe
in... Piero.
Well, we did.
Yeah. And he put his reputation on the line, did he not?
Yes.
But Ronaldo is a different level, obviously.
Yes.
But
yes.
Obviously, that's difficult, and there's been a lot of sort of spending cutbacks in the league with COVID enforced, salary cap reductions and so forth. But do you still believe in the power of the marquee player to draw attendances and make the game mainstream here? Or is there something else we really need to tap into to convert that sort of, you know, interest that George is talking about with, you know, 99,000 people here for a friendly to an A-League fixture?
I think it's multi-layered. I think it can help. It's a bit of a sugar hit. As we saw with Del Piero, you know, for the first season, he packed out stadiums wherever he went. Mm. By the second season, the novelty had sort of worn off a little bit. So it can be a short-term fix, but they can help. And they also help, you know, don't forget to develop young players here as well. Imagine if you were a young kid at Sydney FC, as, you know, several of them were. I think it was Blake Powell who was on the score sheet the same day when Del Piero got his first goal against Newcastle Jets. I might be wrong, but, you know, imagine Blake Powell walking out and texting his mates going, I'm playing with Del Piero today. You know, it's unbelievable. So they can certainly help teach. And I think a good example of this was Ola Toivonen. Even though he was, okay, it's not the same register as Del Piero in terms of his fame, but he was a proper marquee. He was a damn good player. And you could see that he lifted the players around him, and he wasn't playing in the best victory side either, to be fair. So I think they still have value. But is it the only thing? No, it's not the panacea. Still, for me, and you mentioned that 99,000 crowd at the MCG, we've got those fans. They're there. Some of them are more connected to the game than others, but they know about it. Now, what we've got to do is to get people stop caring about the person who wears the jersey and the name on the back, and concentrate more on the badge on the front. We've got to get them connected with that tribalism for the love of their club, which, you know, I grew up with almost as my DNA, because I had it handed down to me by my dad and granddad and great granddad who played for them in 1890, whatever it was. You know, so it's that love of the club. I had heroes too. Colin Bell was my hero in the 70s. But when he retired, or had he been transferred — he wasn't, he got injured and retired — but had he been transferred, I wouldn't have transferred my allegiances. I was still a Man City fan. That was Francis my Lee. Club. Francis Lee, Mike Summerby. And when City got relegated to the third tier of English football, I still went every week. And people here bang on about, oh, it's the quality. You'll never get the fans because the quality's not good enough. Doesn't matter. If you've got that connection to your club, when I watched City in the third division, they were absolute garbage. They were terrible. Didn't matter. I still went every week because it was my club. And that's say- that's the tribalism that we need to engender. We've got it to a certain extent. The A-League's done a decent job overall. And, you know, we look at the last couple of years and go, oh, the crowds aren't great, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at from where we started and maybe 20, 30 years ago, it's actually doing okay. It's just not gone on to where it should have.
Do you know what really excites me? And Josh and I have discussed this too, the quality of the youngsters that are coming through. And Marco Tilio, one of many. There is a young kid called Lofthouse.
Jez Lofthouse. Yes, very good.
What a beautifully balanced young man and can play football.
Surprised he's not in the A-League. He has had trials, I know that.
Yeah, just recently.
And the Mariners, I think.
And there are others. And there are others coming through. And there's a factory in Adelaide that's churning them out.
Absolutely.
It's called Adelaide City. The Adelaide Reds. It's just fantastic stuff. And WA, we haven't discussed it because the king over there, Mark McGowan, has closed the door and won't let anybody move, either in or out. But look, there are some tremendous – we had Jamie Harnwell on a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling us they're working hard over there to play the game because they can, you know, and it's and they've got some important FFA Cup games. Well, and how exciting is that going to be?
Brilliant. And, you know, just on that, we're seeing at the moment – the opportunities that were given to, and I'll pick one name out, to Alu Kool last year, who played for the Mariners. Now, he's gone to Stuttgart. He scored four goals in his first handful of games. He's playing in the Stuttgart 2. But, you know, he's now getting his opportunity. The Mariners got a fee. Everybody wins. That's the football ecosystem. So that development of talent, particularly out of the African diaspora, and you mentioned Adelaide, there's a big South Sudanese community there. Same, I think, to a lesser extent in Melbourne. Awa Mabil came out of there. Ruan Tongyik, Bruce Kamau, Alu Kool. You know, there's a whole production line. The Touré brothers at Adelaide, Kusini Yenge, Tete Yenge up at Newcastle. You know, all these young kids are getting opportunities, which is fantastic. Now, if we can balance that out with good experienced pros and a sprinkling of, you know, magic dust via the marquees, which is difficult, but if we can do that, then we've got the perfect recipe, you know, for a good league, to both to develop players and to entertain the fans here, because we can't forget the fans here. I know everybody, a lot of coaches and a lot of pundits, oh, it's a development league. All our eggs should be in developing players. That's part of it. But we've still got to attract fans through the gate and make sure this is a serious competition here. It's about finding that balance, I think.
And that second division will give us that union, that bringing of the two broken bodies and bring them together and make it whole. Look, it's been fantastic. We're thrilled to bits that you're back and you're on air. What's the next big game?
I'm calling the Matildas next Wednesday morning, 3:30 yes. a.m., along with Amy Chapman. So looking forward to it. I haven't called the Matildas in a while, so should be fun.
And what are you making of some of the outstanding young talent that's the next tier, just pushing the Sam Kerrs and others for, hey, don't forget me, I'm here because I want to play in a World Cup in less than 2 years' time.
I tell you that the girls that I'm looking forward to seeing next Wednesday, look, we know all about Sam and Caitlin Ford.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No disrespect.
Emily, Emma Checkers.
Yeah, Emily Van Egmond, yep. Emma yep. Ellie Carpenter. You know, they're the established stars now. The ones that I'm looking forward to seeing are particularly Winnie Heatley, I think, has been called up for the first time. Now, I've watched her play for Brisbane. I think she's very good. And Australia, the Matildas have a problem in the heart of the defence. They're probably a couple of central defenders short of being a real challenger for silverware. Now, Winnie Heatley, I don't know if she's, you know, the woman to be able to fill that role, but I think she's got an opportunity. I think Claire Wheeler's been called up as well. So that this could be an experimental lineup in terms of the defence for Tony Gustafsson to have a look at some of those girls and say, you know, maybe she's the girl that can push through in the same way that Sam Kerr did 10, 15 years ago. She's been around for that long and all the rest of them. So there's a big opportunity for those younger defenders in particular. So that's what I'm looking for.
Josh?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also... kind of talents who've slipped off the radar for the Matildas recently, who, you know, if they get back to regular club football, could be making a grand return. I mean, we all saw Alex Chidiak a few years ago burst onto the scene. She hasn't been involved. She's been left out of squads and so forth. But now she's actually training and in preseason EN in Japan. So there are, I think, a few players who've had overseas moves not quite pan out for them. I guess Jenna McCormack would be one of those who came back to MPLW to play a few games and just get some minutes in her leg. So there's the competition for places in the squad is incredibly intense at the moment.
It is. And, you know, you look at the Olympics and Mary Fowler's sort of emergence, and we always knew that she was a very talented youngster. Is she now at the point where she demands a regular starting spot? To be honest, I think selection in the squad is almost a given at the moment. But can she force her way into that first 11 on a regular basis? So
who's our best keeper?
That's a good question. I mean, up until the Olympics, I would have said, no, it's Lydia. But now I think Tegan Micah had such a good game, good games. I think it might be her, but I don't want to say that because I really like Lydia and I think she's a great goalkeeper.
We love Lydia, but I'm just saying when they're knocking on the door.
Yeah, it's good. Competition for places. It's what you want.
You want them red hot.
Yeah.
Simon, it's been a delight, my friend. Welcome back to the game.
Thank you.
And we look forward to catching up. It's the Matildas up against the Irish.
Yeah, that's right, in Dublin.
In Dublin. Well done. Okay. You got your pronunciation directory ready?
Well, let me tell you, Ireland will not be as difficult as Vietnam were last week. Goodness me, that was a tough one. Thankfully, my local laundrette has a Vietnamese guy who runs it, and he literally sat down and ran me through every single name.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Will you stop giving away all those trade secrets?
Well, I've got to find out how to say them from somewhere, haven't I?
Correct.
Listen, Simon, my mom's a English as a second language teacher, and trust me, the Vietnamese don't think much of pronouncing English names either. So the feeling is mutual.
Yeah, I know. But to be honest, and you're not going to get all of them right. You're not going to get all of them right, but if you make an effort, I think that shows that you're showing respect to the opposition. Yeah. And let's be honest, somebody pronounces one of our guys' names wrong from overseas, we're quick to jump on it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, Simon Pleasure. Hill. Just a terrific opportunity to hear from the voice of the game down under, and we wish him great calling throughout the season. And he's got a hot one, an international between the Matildas and the Irish coming up. Is it next week?
It's next Wednesday morning, 3:30 a.m. Eastern.
Yep. Prime time.
Book it on.
Time, yeah. Thanks, guys. Simon. Have a good week.
Great
You're
stuff.
Listening.
Catch you next week, Josh.
Football Nation.
See you, George.
On FNR.
Yeah, that's great.